This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We've heard a lot about the Green New Deal that's been championed by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and co-sponsored by more than 60 Democratic members of the U.S. House of Representatives. But what is it? It's been referred to by Nancy Pelosi as the Green Dream. And in fact, a number of climate folks have been a little bit concerned because it has other things in it dealing with social services, labor unions, education, and the oppressed. Joining us on the line is Alex Brill with the American Enterprise Institute to talk about this issue. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Good to be with you.
So, Alex, let's start with what is this? I mean, there's a lot of confusion surrounding the release of this and what it actually is.
There sure is. Well, first, let me say that from a technical perspective, what it is it's not a legislative bill. It's a legislative resolution. In other words, it's the feelings of the members of Congress who have co-signed or signed onto this bill. It's their beliefs. It's a statement of their beliefs. And what they believe is that we are facing a climate crisis and that the federal government needs to intervene and the federal government needs to borrow the money necessary to turn the U.S. economy into one that is carbon free, that to move the electrical system, our electricity, to a clean energy, entirely to clean energy. And as you described, while we talk about this primarily as a energy policy agenda and a clean energy climate agenda, it is also much more and involves, among these statements of belief, the notion that everyone is entitled to high quality health care, everyone's entitled to a guaranteed job, clean water, clean food, things that are appealing, I think, to many of the left's constituencies, but that are just enormously, and I mean enormously, expensive.
So when we talk about a number of environmentalists are very concerned about the release of this because it took on all of these issues, and I guess they're concerned with what you just talked about, the price tag.
That's right. It's hard to know what the price tag of a wish or a dream might be, and this really is that in many regards, but it's certainly trillions of dollars just for the energy component of this, just for the part that moves us from the energy system that we have today to one that's entirely green. It means replacing so many of our existing power plants. The resolution talks about upgrading all buildings to be more energy efficient. And whether that's $2 trillion or $5 trillion or $8 trillion, it's on that order of magnitude.
And, you know, when we talk about also guaranteeing universal access to clean water, I mean, that's not anything new, is it? I mean, we've always aspired to have clean water delivered for everyone, right?
Absolutely. And you know, fortunately, most of our water is excellent. Of course, we know that it's not always excellent. And we know the stories of communities that have suffered from water that's not up to standard. And those are serious issues as well. But the totality of this proposal is, and the timeline, quite frankly, the proposal talks about the need to move, the urgency associated with the risk and the need to move within short order to this clean environment. You know, my concerns are, one, just the overall expense of this. I'm actually sympathetic to the notion that the climate is changing and that policymakers need to pay attention, that something needs to be done. We need to recognize climate change as a risk to our society and to our economy. But I think it just is tremendously important to distinguish between we have a problem and any solution is okay to we have a problem and we need to think carefully about what the solution is. And what strikes me with this proposal is it's the opposite of what I would call a market-based approach. It's instead of saying we have a problem and we want to incentivize the economy to recognize the costs of climate change and to make adjustments, it's saying, no, we don't care about the market. We're going to program from Washington, D.C., exactly what the solutions are. And in Washington, D.C., we're going to spend that money. We're going to borrow to spend that money and spend however much money is necessary.
And I would assume that they're going to tax the same people to pay for it, right? That they've talked about all these other programs that they want to do, that same 1% is going to lay out, shell out all the money necessary for all of these improvements.
It seems that way. It's a little bit unclear, in fact. The proposal does not specify the funding mechanism, so it doesn't say where these trillions of dollars are coming from. Of course, the same people who are advocating for this agenda are also advocating for a wealth tax or tax rates that go up to 70%. So it seems reasonable to put those two pieces together and say that's where the money is going to come from. But the document is, I believe, intentionally not saying how they're going to pay for it. And they have talked about just borrowing the money, which seems to be a real turn of perspective for many on the left who complained about large federal borrowing and large deficits in the last few years.
Yeah, and I think they have made the statement that these changes will pay for themselves. And, you know, if that's the case, why haven't we been doing this for the last 30 or 40 years if they're paying for themselves?
I think that's an excellent question. You know, I mean, there is, a concern, I think from, you know, across the political spectrum that addressing climate change is going to put some people out of work. And the counter argument is, well, we're going to create new jobs. We're going to create jobs, you know, retrofitting buildings, or we're going to create jobs making windmills or solar plants. That's true. I mean, as we shift the economy, then jobs shift along, but it doesn't work perfectly well by any means. It's very difficult to take someone who's working in one fossil fuel industry in North Dakota or West Virginia and tell that person, well, you lost your job, but you can move to New Mexico and be a solar plant installer. That doesn't always work very well.
You know, and just at the time when we want to be less reliant on foreign oil and fossil fuels and everything else, and we are for the first time in a long time now as the number one producer of natural gas and oil in the world, all of a sudden that's a really bad thing. And, you know, so we're not reliant on others in controlling the price nearly as much as we once did, healthy for our economy. And it's almost as if we're doubling down on the issue.
Yeah, my view is that this notion of moving towards energy independence, being less reliant on foreign oil, is a real positive. It's a strength that we should strive for, and as you described, that we have made tremendous progress. And to me, part of energy security means the ability to derive energy from multiple sources. And sometimes the most appropriate source may be natural gas. That may be cost-effective and appropriate for a particular application. And sometimes it may be wind or it's solar or nuclear.
Right.
And that having that flexibility, those multiple sources of energy, and moving and pushing on the technology so that solar and wind of the future is better than solar and wind today, and that we continue to make progress, those are all things that we should be striving for. And then there may be a role for federal policymakers in helping the market signal appropriately what the cost is, what the social burden is with carbon dioxide emissions. There is something for lawmakers to do, but that's not really what's in this proposal. This proposal is a handful of lawmakers deciding which type of energy is okay and which type of energy is not okay, and we're going to get rid of the stuff that we don't like, and we're going to force everybody onto the stuff that we do like.
The other interesting thing that I think that really complicates these issues is it really draws upon foreign country reciprocation, does it not? I mean, climate change issues are not geographic or territorial. We're all in this together, the entire world. And if we're putting out proposals that no one else is going to buy off on, what value are they?
I think that's a big challenge that all proponents of climate change mitigation face is this is absolutely a global problem. And how can one nation, you know, by themselves unilaterally do something that's going to change the overall global atmospheric outcomes when China's building coal plants faster than we can build solar plants? You know, how are we going to get ahead? And I think that that's something that folks on the left who advocate for this and folks on the right who advocate for climate change policy struggle with. And obviously one answer is to be engaged, to look for cooperative agreements, opportunities for, you know, major economies to work together on this. Some people think that the United States, by investing in clean energy, can bring the cost down of those clean technologies, and through that process, other countries will be able to afford clean energy in the future, and so that in that sense, we can lead and others will follow. But I think that the point is well taken, that until other economies are seriously engaged in this effort, it's going to be very difficult to make real progress.
Absolutely. Alex, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your insight today.
Thanks for having me on.
All righty. That's Alex Brill, American Enterprise Institute, talking about the cost and consequences of the Green New Deal or Dream. We'll be right back. We want to hear from you. 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. This is Newell on WWL. This Green New Deal obviously didn't take the shape of a proposed law because it couldn't pass, right? The current Congress, Republicans control the Senate and would be vetoed by the president, thankfully. But it's an effort to galvanize the left and move the Democratic Party to award a commitment to stronger, broader, and more direct attention to climate change, as reported in an article by The Washington Post. More than 70 House Democrats and 12 Senate Democrats have backed the Ocasio-Cortez in unveiling the Green New Deal. There's been a lot of confusion about this because they also issued some frequently asked questions list about the Green New Deal. And that's where this notion of providing economic security to those unwilling to work and ruling out nuclear power as part of the solution to the climate crisis. And a number of folks on the left, most of whom speak on the condition of anonymity, are completely frustrated by this FAQ, frequently asked question, policy statement being released and answers being provided in that respect because they did not sign on for that. Let's go to line one, talk to George. What say you, George?
When I think of Congress, it just gives you a big headache, okay? You know, these people, they come in with their own agendas instead of their constituents' agenda. How about worrying about the problems that exist now, okay? I'm not saying don't think about the problems in the future that may pop up, like global warming, et cetera. We've got enough problems that need to be handled now. Handle those problems now, okay? I mean, this woman, I don't even know how she got in. I bet you nobody asked her platform before they elected her in, and now she goes off on a tangent on her own pipe dream about this Green Dream stuff, and they're probably like, well, wait, she never said nothing about this before when she was running, and now she's in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know what? If you want to implement it in your area that you represent first and let your constituents pay for it, do it as a plan, and let's see how that goes before you want to try to put it over the whole country.
Yeah. You know, and the thing is, this Green New Deal, it doesn't deal with just the environment. I mean, it has statements that deal with the oppressed, for example. It says to promote justice and equity by stopping current, preventing future, and repairing historic oppression of indigenous peoples, communities of color, migrant community, deindustrialized communities, depopulated rural communities, the poor, low-income workers, women, the elderly, the unhoused, people with disabilities, and the youth.
Okay, I understand where you're coming from, but look, you know what? I heard you talk to the doctor, the professor, whoever before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody's concerned about cost. Here's our pipe dream idea. Let's not worry about cost and where the money's going to come from and all of that right now. It's another Nancy Pelosi with the Obamacare thing. Let's just implement the plan now, and we'll worry about all the other particulars later. Right. Well, no. When you're a project manager, you lay out a project, you take costs and everything into consideration, where it's going to come from. How are we going to fund this? How are we going to do this? These people that get into Congress, they don't ever do that because it's not their money. It's not their money. I mean, how would you like to have a checking account that's endless and just say,
Look, George, I'd love to spend your money.
Exactly.
And I'm sure you'd love to spend mine.
Yeah. As long as somebody's put it there, what do you care where it comes from?
Right. Absolutely.
They're listening to their own minds.
Absolutely. George, thanks so much for calling. Let's go to line two. Talk to Bobby. What say you, Bobby?
Hey, Mr. Nolan, thanks for taking the call.
Thank you for calling.
Well, to answer George's question about how she got elected, well, she comes from a district. She represents the Bronx and Queens, so that's how she got elected with her agenda. And what it sounds like is this resolution is basically just like Congress does in the past. Every time they bring a bill, they lop everything all together instead of just taking bits and pieces out of it. So who doesn't want free stuff, but who's going to pay for it? And it's just like these politicians, they come out swinging for the fence because a lot of them think that the president is not going to get reelected in 2020 or something's going to criminally going to happen to him. So that they're moving to the left, and they're swinging for the fences. That's all I got to say. It's disgusting.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Bobby. I appreciate it. And just to be clear, the Green New Deal is not a proposed law. It's just a measure that was introduced, and as was pointed out, it's really about their feelings, you know, and trying to pull people together and so forth. And this thing covers the climate, social services, labor unions, education, the oppressed. We'll talk more about that. It's almost as if we haven't been working towards this all along, and this is some epiphany that's been presented by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. It's really just a rebranding and a restating of what we've been doing for a long time in hoping to achieve. We'll be right back. So the work is left, and, you know, the way that you basically work through this is you've got these ideals, these dreams, these feelings, and it now has to go through committees to backfill whether or not there's going to be any meaningful legislation that grows out of this expression about how you feel about a number of things. And I said earlier that environmentalists are very concerned because they're kind of conflating these issues of social service, labor unions, education, and the oppressed with climate and, you know, whether or not that they're going to be able to affect change there in talking about this. But some of these are just very I don't quite understand what the hoopla about, you know, building resiliency against climate change related disasters such as extreme weather, guaranteeing, you know, universal access to clean water, encouraging more scientific research. I mean, have you ever heard of a presidential candidate go to a podium and say, I'm opposed to increase in scientific research? In fact, I am opposed to moving the country forward. I do not want anybody to earn more money. And in fact, I want people to be miserable. No. You know, so when you read through this, it's like I don't understand, like, on education, provide resources, training, and high-quality education, including higher education, to all people of the United States. I have never heard anybody say that they don't want as many people as possible to go to college. To the contrary, I've heard a lot of people say that they wish more and more people could go to college. On social services, guaranteeing a job with a family-sustaining wage, adequate family and medical leave, paid vacations, retirement security to all the people of the United States. Who doesn't want that? Everybody wants that. How are you going to make that happen is the threshold question. Provide all the people of the United States with high-quality health care, affordable, safe, and adequate housing, economic security. Have you ever heard a candidate say that they were opposed to that? I haven't. So, I mean, This has received so much hoopla, and of course the rollout has been a mess. But what would you expect from a freshman congressperson who was serving cocktails 2 years ago? You know, where they're releasing these policy statements, and how you go about backfilling this is going to be something that's going to be a little bit more difficult than just getting it right and issuing a press release and having a few of your peers stand beside you while you're doing so. Let's go to Jay and Slidell. What say you, Jay?
Hey, Noel. How you doing?
Doing great.
Okay. And first of all, I do want to say I think that she's off her rocker, you know, with this. And unfortunately, but there is one thing that I've seen her, heard her say that is actually true that I don't hear anybody actually kind of verifying. Because it is inevitable that we're going to have to go renewable eventually. If the human race lives long enough, we will deplete all the fossil fuels, and eventually we will have to figure out a way to have sustainable, renewable energy.
But, Jay, doesn't she lose credibility when she says that's going to happen in 12 years? Is that was it 10 or 12? I can't remember. Was it 12 years?
It can't happen that quick, Newell. But the point that is lost on this is that the sooner we do it, the easier it's going to be. If we wait till oil and coal and stuff like that start depleting to the point where, you know, they're scarce or the demand is much greater than the supply, we will have conditions like we've never seen on this planet before. Because especially America and now, you know, Europe as well, although their fuel prices are higher, and now China is addicted to oil, you know, and the point that is lost on this is that if you do it, if you implement it before it's necessary, then the transition is going to be smoother. If you wait till the ninth hour, then it's going to be could be catastrophic. And there are people in Europe that have developed ways to capture carbon out of the air, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see the United States get on board with that, as well as I think one of the best things we could do for renewable energy and also to help us have a little bit more control over our environment is to start putting, photovoltaic solar cells up above the atmosphere in low Earth orbit, because a solar cell at that elevation will generate 10 times the power of one on the surface of the planet. And also it would probably help us like cool down some of the regions of the Gulf and the ocean, you know, to help try to, you know, keep some of these hurricanes from becoming these super storms. So it would have to serve a twofold purpose, as well as being probably provide more jobs than anything in the history of the planet. So,
but Jay, this is the problem. This is the problem that I have. Okay, and I get that she's a rocker. She's been able to procure more media coverage than any new person to Congress that I've ever seen. It's a seniority-based system.
Ridiculous.
She wouldn't even get a published statement, you know, 3 years ago. And all of a sudden, she's out there issuing policy initiatives around the Speaker of the House, around the infrastructure. And actually, there's a part of that I actually like. Okay, so don't get me wrong. I'm not completely down on her. I actually kind of like some of this. I would really like it if she was a lot more intellectual in her approach.
Right, sure. She does not sound credible. She spouts figures that have no
basis. So I get, you know, because she talks in absolutes like there's almost no one doing solar. There's almost no one doing wind. There's almost no one doing this, when I know that's not true.
And you're right. But the thing of it is I don't think we have the sense of urgency. And that's one thing she is bringing that I think – you know, unfortunately, she sounds like a dingbat, and it's gonna make this message lose credibility. And we do need to realize that, you know, we do infect our environment. You know, there's so many scientists that agree on this. Now, it's not a political issue. Okay, it doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican. If sea level rises and you live near the coast, you're gonna have to move. You know, it's that simple.
Right. Well, and I do understand. You know. And this does require credible leadership. Look, we should know better than most. When we talk about guaranteeing universal access to clean water, we're having boil water advisories every month. I mean, I understand the trials and tribulations. I also understand the cost of the infrastructure to deliver a lot of what they're talking about, and the money's just not there. It's not there now, and it's not going to be there in the distant future either. I mean, we have jurisdictions in this state that can't afford to pay for the medical exam necessary to get into a pension system.
So, thank you for your time, Noel.
You know, and I appreciate it, Jay. Thanks for the call. So how do we have these expectations as it relates to just putting out these propositions about our feelings? There has to be something more meaningful than just this. We'll be right back after the break. Give us a call, 260-1870, or text us at 870-870. This is Newell on WWL. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi referred to the resolution. She said it will be one of several or maybe many suggestions that we receive. The Green Dream, or whatever they call it. Nobody knows what it is, but they're for it, right? And then the next day, obviously, she probably got a little heat from the far left and expressed at a news conference that she was excited and said, I welcome the Green Deal and any other proposals that, you know, most of the Democratic presidential candidates, they're courting supporters and they're embracing same. Let's go to Jeannie in Poplarville. What say you, Jeannie?
The way they're going to get the money is they're going to raise the tax rate on the top 10% of earners to 70%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where do a lot of these things come from? Progressivism, which we know is basically, we want what you have, we'll just take it from you.
It's redistribution of wealth, plain and
right,
simple.
But there is a whole lot of other really ugly stuff, and you look up socialism, progressivism, it is closely related to fascism and
sure.
communism, those things that are really an anathema to America. The other thing is...
And they're all working well in other places, aren't they?
Okay, yes, indeed. Absolutely. Behind her, this woman is not thinking this stuff up herself. There is a man whose name I cannot pull up because I don't have my iPad with me, but...
Yeah, and you couldn't pronounce it either.
Yeah, that was my problem. It's Asian American, Indian Asian, something like that. But anyway, that man came from Bernie Sanders' campaign,
mm-hmm.
and he's a socialist and a progressive. And this is the man who is directing all of these things. And in addition to that, the people who signed on to this bill, this pile of things, it's not a bill, it's a resolution, this pile of things, first off, it looks like a bunch of campaign bumper stickers, but what they asked for was, what's your idea? And you'll sign on to this, won't you? And they just put them in there. And that's why it's such a mishmash of weirdness.
Yeah, and I mean, they even express that, you know, that it was very difficult in pulling a bunch of different people from a bunch of different walks of life. And, you know, they referred to them as collaborators and stakeholders and trying to be open and transparent, and they made mistakes. And really the FAQs, a frequently asked questions document or memo that they released about even providing sustenance to people that are unwilling to work, and, you know, created a lot of confusion, because really that was probably an FAQ directed at one of the original drafts that was actually done by Ocasio-Cortez's staff, where she wanted this to be a lot further than where it ultimately ended up, because she had to compromise.
Well, isn't that scary?
Yeah, well, that you know, that compromise thing, it'll get you every time, you know?
Thank you.
All righty, Jeannie. Let's go to Daniel on line one. What say you, Daniel?
Good afternoon, Noel. How are you?
Good, and you?
Pretty good. So I spoke to you before about this issue of federal grants to Walmart, and I understand that someone previous to that caller said that there's not enough money for the Green Project. Is that correct?
No, they she was saying where they would get the money, you know, that they would tax the top 1%.
This was the caller before that.
Okay.
They said that there's not enough money to implement this idea that she has. Which is really not true, because we're giving billions of dollars to Walmart and no one seems to care. And I mentioned this to you before, how the United States government is giving money to our tax dollars to Walmart so they can build more stores. It's not a lie. You can look it up on the internet.
Are you talking about in ITEP, industrial tax exemption programs, or in other economic mm-hmm. incentives that are given to companies that move into geographic areas?
Sort of, but what happened was the feds gave a grant to NORA, and NORA turns around and gives it to Walmart and Gentilly. And that's just one that we know of. Why do billionaires need our money to make more, to build more stores?
Well, that's a subject for a different show, but the facts are, right. I mean, look, there's government waste anywhere, everywhere. So, I mean, there's any number of places that where we could have, you know, improvement. And maybe that ought to be the focus first before we start giving all this other stuff away and start talking about any number of these issues, that we start looking internally as to where we can improve.
I agree.
All right. Thank you, Daniel. Appreciate the call. Be right back after the breaks. We're back, and Scoot joins me in the studio. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, let's talk about Zulu deciding that they're going to keep blackface. I don't think that was really much of I didn't think that was going to be a big controversy, but
I'm surprised it took them that long to release that information.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, well, there's no way they're going to change that, and they're not going to, but we'll talk about that. The whole issue over the wall and border security, is this more about politics or is it more about national security? We'll talk about that. And also, this is an interesting story. There's an 18-year-old who committed suicide, and his girlfriend texted him to go ahead with his plan. She's now going to jail.
Right.
Should she go to jail? I mean, he called her. He was in the garage. There was the carbon monoxide building up there. And she said, come on, go ahead and do it. I mean, you might as well do it. I mean, you keep saying you're going to do it and you won't do it, so do it. He did it, and she's going to jail. And I guess the question is, should she? Because there is this idea of personal accountability. I mean, if somebody tells you to do something and you do it, is that your fault too?
Yeah, it's kind of, I haven't followed that case very closely, but just thinking legally, it's an interesting theory.
It is.
On many, many fronts. And when you think about any other types of crimes that you could be contributing, you know, by making a statement as well. Yeah.
I guess along the lines of being an accomplice.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Interesting topic. Scoot's up next. Stay with us. We'll see you again tomorrow.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.